Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pan Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, ryansickler.com, and Ryan Sickler on all your social media. And again, thank you guys. Thank you for being part of this community. Thank you for subscribing, supporting, all of it. Whether you're new here, whether you've been here, thank you so much. Go watch my special Lefty Son. I keep saying YouTube pulled it from the algorithm. It's still doing well, so you got to go find it. Please go support that, share it, like it, comment, all that good stuff. If you got to have more, then you got to check out the Patreon. Listen to me. It's $5 a month. You get the Honeydew a day early. You get it ad-free. You get it at no extra cost. And it's the wildest, I'm telling you, it's the best deal on Patreon. It's $5 and you're hearing stories from y'all, okay? We just had a lady who was the victim of a murder-suicide attempt. Her, I believe it was husband at the time, shoots her. She ducks, gets hit once in the carotid artery. The other bullet, Dr. Drew, goes through her mouth, out of her cheek and neck. She's now paralyzed in a wheelchair. Her mom is in the house, sees this. Dude blows his brains out in front of her, and she runs out and plugs the carotid artery with her hand, saves her daughter's life. $5, y'all. And if you or someone you know has a story that has to be told, please submit it to honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for a new podcast to listen to, go listen to my old podcast, The Crab Feast. It's one of the best just storytelling podcast out there. Everybody you know and love in the podcast land is on there. Bill Burr, Kreischer, Segura, Christina P., everybody. So go check that out. Subscribe to that. And this weekend, I believe it's this weekend, July 7th and 8th, Appleton, Wisconsin. I'm going to be there, y'all. Get your tickets for that. August, we got some new dates to announce. August 18th and 19th, we're in Tampa. September 1st and 2nd, Springfield, Missouri. And September 15th and 16th, Tulsa, Oklahoma. All right, that's all my back and lungs can handle right now. And that's the biz. Go get your tickets at ryansickler.com. Now, you guys know what we do over here. I always say we highlight the lowlights, and these are the stories behind the storytellers. I am very excited to have this guest back on the Honeydew, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Dr. Drew. Welcome,
yeah, buddy. Here we are. Young man. So why did you two put you in jail? I want to know more about that.
Well, they never tell you. They just say we have.
You can call and get a person sometimes if you're diligent.
We have a contact who also tells us she can't help us with that and keeps pushing us off. Mm. So I've talked to Nadav about theirs. They don't tell you. They just say we manually reviewed it And then my question would be, how many people? One person?
Complained.
Does one person decide the fate of everything that goes out there to all people?
What everybody else can listen to.
Right.
And then they give you their bylaws, like they give you their algorithm, and it says nothing. You can look at it and go, I didn't do any of these things.
Right.
What are you talking about?
So
disturbing.
Also, I think they don't like, well, this show is, I mean, please subscribe to this show and help the show because the words on this show, and I'm going to say them now, so this will be a demonetized episode, but when we talk about trauma and abuse and molestation and rape, those are
You're not allowed to talk about those
are
things?
Words that the algorithm doesn't like.
Oh, my God.
We're demonetized in the queue. When Kirsten posts and Annie posts an episode on Sunday for a Tuesday release, it's already limited. I don't know if they're using AI to search words or what it is.
Of course.
Is my guess. How could you possibly? We just uploaded it 5 seconds ago.
Literally,
did someone listen to it?
Well, of course, AI. But it's literally the most significant and common medical issues of our time.
Yeah. I glorified weed in their opinion, which, I mean, I technically do. Over alcohol, I do. I didn't glorify it in general, just comparing it to the one thing. And they don't like weed or marijuana
That's
on YouTube at all.
That seems counter their culture.
Even though it's legal, even though it's medicinal, blah, 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 blah,
blah. So the only thing about weed, though, I have no problem with people smoking weed. I don't give a shit. But we are seeing some stuff now.
Tell me.
Because of the concentration. The concentrations, as you know, are so intense.
Oh, you mean the power of these things? Oh, yeah, these things.
And so we are seeing people whose brains can't handle that. And we're seeing psychoses. We're seeing mood disturbances. We're seeing anxiety disorders. And we're seeing addiction, too, particularly if you're getting onto the dabs.
Yeah.
If you're doing that, you're in that threshold.
I don't even think my lungs can handle that.
So it's really like crack. It's the crack of weed.
And, I don't even do the – they also have infused ones where they're taking the keef and everything and then putting it back in. Give me some flour. Just some flour.
It's because people get tolerant and they need more. And that's a problem if you're getting into that sort of zone. Not that – you know, there are plenty of people who smoke weed every day are fine. And I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying we got to get honest about – given the concentrations of THC that are in there, it is starting to affect
weed
people's
from
lives
the Vietnam
and brains.
Era. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
They don't even know. But you're not even old enough to remember taking seeds and sticks out of the weed.
Dr. Drew,
buying
talking
by
about
the lid.
I would sit down and put an album in front of me with one on, and I would sit there and an hour of seeding my weed, I didn't get the pops and the cracks and the sticks.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. They'd eat the seeds. Remember that?
Yeah. My brothers used to chew them. Yeah. And then we'd read things or hear things that there were cyanide in them and stuff. Is that real, though?
I don't know. It was all the rumors I heard then, too.
Right. Look, I wanted to talk to you about this. So this show is people coming on and talking about the worst times of their life. Mm. They're talking about their trauma, the things they've overcome. What I don't think we've ever really discussed is actually what trauma is, what it does to the imprinting of a person, especially at the age that it happens. I know, like, listening to Loveline back in the day when you guys would talk about especially a young lady who had a voice that was high-pitched in her 40s or 50s. And I've smoked a lot of weed. I feel like there was a correlation to about the time that trauma happened to them, maybe the age-ish. Am I sort of in the ballpark on that?
Yeah, so one of the things that trauma does is arrest development. And we started noticing that we would close our eyes and listen to some of these voices. We would immediately I could literally picture the age of the trauma. I'm talking to a six-year-old. That's what comes to mind, or an eight-year-old. The voice would trigger an image in my head of the age of that individual I was speaking to. Never wrong.
Never.
We were just never wrong. And there was another thing, because we were sitting there, you know, with headphones listening all night, we also would get other kinds of feelings from people if they had sort of personality disorders from the traumas, because they would immediately, we'd get, you know, Adam would have a certain reaction, I'd have a reaction, and that's how things work. I mean, back in the psychiatric hospital, when I ran programs in the psychiatric hospital, we would sort of confirm our diagnostic impressions based on how people responded to the patients. In other words, or how they responded to us even. In other words, I had a nurse, my charge nurse, loved sociopaths. And if she would say, and when the patient would come in, she'd just go, oh, I love him. He's so entertaining. We just go, oh, shit, here we go. Sociopath. If the patient.
you knew off of her reaction.
And we were never wrong. Yeah. And if the patient liked me, like a lot, it was a female, borderline. The borderline's like me. And my partner, my physician partner, if they liked him, bipolar disorder, all the bipolars. It was just very interesting. And so that's why you have to have a team, because how we respond to other people and how they respond to us is protean. It's all over the place. And some people don't like or don't respond to others. And so you have to have somebody that you can reach them with. So that was that. So back to trauma. So trauma, you know, we really, when you're talking about trauma, there's adult trauma, right? Being in an earthquake or the military trauma, that kind of thing, that results in all sorts of symptomatology around PTSD and anxiety disorders and sleep disturbances and intrusive images and all the things we know about the veterans struggle with, right? That is a certain kind of trauma. That's an overwhelming experience in adulthood. If you've had earlier trauma, those overwhelming experiences in adulthood tend to be more likely to trigger PTSD. So that's sort of adult trauma. It doesn't really affect your personality development or anything like that. Early trauma has a whole different thing to it. So really the trauma that we're most concerned with is childhood trauma, right? And we in this country have lived through many years of massive denial about what harms children. I mean, there's now finally in the 90s, they came up with the adverse childhood experiences, the ACE scale. What if you have three or more of those experiences in childhood, that is sort of chronic trauma. That's you have a higher probability of.
And what percentage of people is that?
Oh, it's very
90%. Well, let me tell you, is there anyone that goes? There's no one that goes unscathed on this rock in outer space.
They're boring if they do.
So fair enough.
People are very interesting when they've had pathologies and things. But let me tell you some of the things that are on the A scale, and you'll see how common they are. Divorce.
I mean, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
A drug addict in the family.
Yeah.
A family member in prison. I mean, you don't have to have overt physical or sexual abuse. Of course, those are on the list too. Domestic abuse, not necessarily violence, just fighting in the parents. So just add substance, divorce, and fighting.
I would say you're lucky if you only have three.
That's right.
To be honest.
And when you get five, then you really are likely to have very serious long-term problems, both medically and psychiatrically. And it's very common to have all. And there are some that sort of obviously are heavier, so to speak, or more likely to impact. And when you do have things like physical and sexual abuse, usually you have some of the other things going on as well. So,
like talking to you. How old are you now, Dr. Drew?
64.
God damn, you look good. You son
God bless
bitch.
You.
You look good.
What are we planning here, Ryan?
Dr. Drew, bro. I noticed those guns as soon as you got out of the car. I was like, look at you, you son of a bitch. You got me by 14 years, but still I always say I'm part of the walk it off generation. Like you go to your parents back then and it's like, just walk it off.
Walk it off.
You know,
sure.
That little.
And by the way, we thought it was horrible and abusive, but wasn't so bad relative to what they were going on these days.
You're right.
I told you what's on my mind today is I watched the Arnold documentary on Netflix. And he was just like, get busy, do stuff, do things, make a difference, get involved. Just got to do things. Your whole life should be busy and you won't be so disturbed by these things. And he had a physically abusive father, alcoholic, and had all kinds of horrible shit happen to him in childhood too. But let's get back to what trauma is. So trauma –
can I just say this real quick? And this is why I wanted to ask you this.
Yeah.
And I don't want to interrupt and I'll shut up after
this. Well, I don't want to drag on. So if you interrupt, it's no problem.
Back at the YMH days before pandemic and all that good stuff happened, I had talked to you about my mother and the physical, mental, emotional abuse. I suffered all that.
Yeah.
And you said something interesting to me. You said, you know, if you're going to – because I maybe even toyed with having her on an episode or something. You said, it's interesting, but how old is she now? And I said, yeah, she's probably 70 or whatever. And you said, you got to be careful with something like that, because at some point when you see that old, feeble, whatever person, you end up looking like
you're
a bully who's still attacking this person,
you could
right?
feel bad.
And the funny thing to me is, like, I've worked on it. We have a relationship now, but up until I was 40, I could have said to you easily, I could live another 40 years and still be like, fuck you, lady. So that imprinting in every fiber of me from early on lives underlying everything I do out there. So and forgiveness and working and it. And,
forgiveness and owning it and all that is really, really important.
Yeah.
Really important. But so, it'd be interesting.
Can we talk about how something that young, whatever your trauma is, it's everlasting.
We'll get there. Yeah. It's not
well, okay.
I mean it leaves its mark. It doesn't have to destroy
you. But it's not going to go on. Would you agree it's not going anywhere, especially or getting any better if you don't work at it?
Oh boy. Yeah, no. Yeah. Different people have different ways. I mean, I watched a documentary from both Steven Spielberg and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and both of them talked about how their work was their sort of process and how but they also worked with therapists over the year, I'm sure, or somebody did around them, and maybe they sort of, how people around us and how we fit with them changes, who we are too. So anyway, I had an abusive mom too, emotionally abusive, unavailable, all that kind of stuff. And we, towards the end of her life, she never came around. Never.
She didn't.
No. And in fact, she was leaning on me hard late in her life for medical stuff. And then every time I'd offer her an opinion, she would fight with me, like abusively fight with me. And finally, I go, don't come to me for this stuff. If you're not, she goes, just because I fight doesn't mean I'm not going to listen to you. And I thought, oh, this is perfect. I just have to bust your balls because that's what I do. And I finally thought, I'm never going to get anything out of this relationship other than I have to do what I need to do to be a good son. And that's it. And that's how it ended. I never got anything from that relationship. It's almost funny.
But was a good son in your eyes to that person?
To answer her medical problems, to show up and visit regularly and to be available.
Just be
and
there.
And not fucking, pop off and any of this bullshit when she started firing at me.
Right.
And it's funny. She used to yell a lot. And we arranged a caretaker for her. And I felt vindicated when this woman said to me, she goes, no, it's great. We're going to, but the yelling, my God, the yelling. And I thought, imagine you're three and that's going on.
How long did it take you to get that vindication? How many years?
55.
Some people die before they ever get it. You know what I mean? Some people die.
Yeah. So trauma.
Jesus.
Trauma is essentially the experience of, at least psychically, if not physically, the organism, the person, has a sense that they will not go forward. They will not go on being. It is a total destruction either of the soul or the body. Like I'm going to die, or this experience is just destroying me psychically. And that experience of we're not set up for that in childhood. We can't manage that. If you're a Navy SEAL, you can manage that. You're trained to do it. It still affects you, right? You still have symptoms later down the road.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
But as a child, it literally shatters the upper limits of the brain's regulatory capacity. And so the brain floods with cortisol. It shuts down. The vagus system, the parasympathetic system kicks in overdrive. You have both hyperstimulation because you're in sort of a fight or flight and hyperinhibition because you can't go anywhere. You're stuck. You're being abused. And the hyperinhibition is probably what does all the damage. And in that state, you know, our vagus nerve evolves with three distinct nuclei. And one of the nuclei is linked into higher functions to as so it has to kind of develop. And it develops as a key component of the brain's regulatory system. So the vagus is turned out is very embedded, as we said, in the parasympathetic system. And that happens to be embedded also that those vagal offshoots with the parasympathetic input are embedded in the what are called the branchial pouches. And the branchial pouches are what develop the muscles to the ears, vocal cords, all the facial musculature. So when we feel something, we can literally attune our ear to vocal prosody in the other. We can use vocal prosody to express emotion ourselves. And the tiny movements of our facial muscles have deep communication potential to particularly children who may be pre-verbal, for instance. That's how moms communicate with babies, with the tiniest input. And so that system gets shattered. It doesn't develop the normal inputs to the higher functions in the brain, and it stays in this sort of more primitive system of dissociation and shutdown. So dissociation both from the feelings and from your body, also dissociation from the higher functions of the brain. So shutdown, dissociation either – and that dissociation can't even be a somatoform dissociation. So if
– what is that?
So if the body is the source of the misery, the shattering, physical abuse, sexual abuse – people will actually kind of dissociate from their body, and the body becomes a source of disorganized information that they never can regulate. So oftentimes you get chronic pain and all kinds of physical complaints that they can't explain because they're disconnected from the normal inflow of information that gets regulated with the whole of the brain. Question so far?
I'm with
is
you.
Is it fit? Makes sense?
Yeah.
So it begs the issue. So this is all work of a guy named Alan Shore and Stephen Porges. Stephen Porges has something called the polyvagal theory, where he talks about this socio-emotional exchange system, which is the vagal system that we evolved with as primates and humans in particularly to communicate with mom, right? That's really what early pre-verbal communication, but we retain it the rest of our life.
All right. My question is this. What made doctors, science start studying this? What was the final tipping point where they're like, all right, some shit's going on in these humans, let's look at this?
The Kaiser Adverse Childhood Experience score was like in the 90s or something, maybe even the 2000s. And, you know, Adam and I were talking to traumatized people every night. It's obvious when you work in general medicine or in psychiatry, all the impact of trauma, because it's always what you see. There was no agreement in the medical community that had a thing. I don't know.
Even if, that late is 90s?
Oh, yeah. Wow. I think some of it is the history of psychiatry, and some of it is the lack of willingness to look at the social, what was really going on in our country, because we had all these divorce is good, kids are little adults, they're fine, they look how resilient they are, they're out playing, they seem fine. We were in massive, massive denial about this. And the Kaiser study on ACE scores was really just somebody noticed that all these people with all these medical problems also seem to have this trauma. I wonder if childhood experiences impact on our medical well-being later. It seems to do that, you know, but no thought of how it does it
right yet.
No thought. The other problem, I think, was people don't appreciate – there's a book out there called Shrink by a guy named Lieberman that chronicles this history very beautifully – how much American psychiatry was captured by psychoanalysis. And psychoanalysis minimized trauma in sort of generally. And trauma was something sort of imagined, right? You imagined having sex with your mother, and you imagined that somebody physically abused. It's all like it was going on. And sometimes it is, let's be fair. Sometimes these are distorted memories and false memories, things like that.
How do you decipher that?
Oh, you can't. It's almost
really
impossible.
Can't. It is. Because they believe it so much.
They experience
that
the
selling of it is.
Yeah. I mean, oftentimes I deal with the parents, these people that have these vivid experiences that I have to sit and process with them because they're their experiences. And the parents just go, I just didn't happen. I don't, okay, but I remember of all things, Maria Bamford's mom saying some of that stuff. I heard her saying like, Maria has a lot of memories of me, and but maybe it did, you know, maybe it's the mom's distorted memories. It doesn't matter. What matters is the person carries this with them, and you got to process it with them. So it begs the issue of how do you do that? And the question, let me just finish my comment about American psychoanalysis, that they just didn't really want to deal with trauma as a separate thing. They knew it was there, but they didn't know what it was, and they didn't have a full theory about the impact. And it was guys that developed the world of interpersonal neurobiology developed, like how brains affect other brains. And Alan Shore was he wrote a book called Affect Regulation and the Origin of the Self. And that was really the breakthrough. And that's probably 30 years ago now. And he developed a whole bunch of followers and people who did their own research and developed their own stuff. And now there's a whole discipline in that area. And it just has bled into everything, even though a lot of doctors don't really know it in the detail I'm sharing with you guys. They understand that that's there. We've gotten away from the single skull notion of psychology and psychiatry. The central nervous system, the brain, in the 90s was the decade of the brain. We moved on to that to realize, oh my God, the brain is embedded in a body. And that body is actually the source of feelings. Feelings are things that come from the body. We still don't know how that really happens because we have these huge nervous plexes. You know, people call them, what are chakras, but they're actually nervous blocks in here. We don't know what they're doing. They're like little mini brains laying down in our body that process information coming out of our body and send it up through the vagus nerve. Mm. And if that vagus nerve is disconnected from the higher function, then again, you're not really hearing your feelings. You're not, you know, processing, you know, regulating feelings. It's that integrated system of brain-body we think of more now. But of course, that brain-body is embedded in relationships. Those relationships are embedded in a socio-historical context. So you see how these impacts, you know, they're waves that's, you know, spread out from the individual experience. And you have to think about all of this shit, especially in today's world now. So it begs the issue of how people develop emotional regulation at all, right? And it turns out brains heal other brains. I think we've known that for a long time, right? Okay. People sit with another person in therapy, and how that brain healed other brains is something that really wasn't that well understood until interpersonal neurobiology came along. And we start to understand more now of how this thing of closeness of two brain bodies communicate in ways that are well beyond words. And, you know, just experiences. There's something awesome about the experience of two bodies in space when the one body needs help and the other body is willing to attune to that and capable of attuning deeply to that experience. And the other person, the patient, can tolerate the closeness. Most people can't tolerate closeness when they've been traumatized because the closeness was the source of the trauma. The people they trusted oftentimes.
Yeah.
And so they just won't ever go back. I mean, if they would go back, they could have sort of developed it with their own family and friends and things and sort of help process that. But they don't. Closeness is sort of something they have to manage rather than something they experience. And so they're always sort of having oftentimes whatever the manifestations that resulted in their personality stuff comes into the room in the relationships, whether it's projective identification or manipulation or shutdown or lack of ability to connect with feelings, all comes into the room with people's therapy. So we have to go back and look at what humans were just meant to do to develop emotional regulation. So a guy named Peter Fonagy figured some of this stuff out. And he has something called the mentalization process. And he studied moms and babies, and we can argue all day about, you know, should it be
women? Where are the dads coming into this?
Do we come into this at all? We do. We actually do. And of course, some, you know, babies don't have moms, right? They have dads. Dads can do this. We just don't do it as automatically. And if you've had babies,
it's not father nature. It's mother nature.
It we literally don't have the big corpus callosum that gives us the connection to the right side of the brain where all this is happening.
This is why women are better people, because we literally
I used to say that, yeah. And Adam gives me shit about that now because, I don't know, he's angry at female politicians. So I used to say that was a better brain because it's more connected, mm-hmm. and more interested. But it comes with liabilities like everything in humans. So it's a right brain phenomenon, and we can do it as men. If you've ever been a father, you will notice you end up sort of following behind your wife going, how did you know that? How do you know he's hungry? How do you know he's – I just know it. I'm tuned. I'm attuned. That right brain to right brain communication before there's any verbal. So what is that made up of? What is that process made up of? So when they observe this interaction with babies, of course, there's eye contact. There's vocal prosody created by the mom. But mostly she does something very interesting with her face. So the baby is approached by the mom, and the babies then learn my mind has content. People can look at me and understand me. I have content. They're designed to look out into the world first to a phenomenon that is totally contingent on them. So they are – everything body function for the first 6 months of life is all a baby is attuned to. They're not – you notice they don't make eye contact or anything. At about 6 months of age, they shift to partial contingencies, things that are sort of dependent on their behavior. You know, I cry and people do things in response to that. I pull the cat's tail. The cat does something. They have mobiles. I like hitting mobiles and things and seeing them do things. But there is a huge part of our brain that's dedicated to the face, other faces. And we have this interest in the social world. We have the attunement of the mom who's always in our face, making eye contact, exchanging with us, and that is very satisfying to the baby. And what that exchange is made up of is the child has an experience, has an emotion, and the mom approaches, studies, like attunes, like what is going on here? What does my body tell me this body is experiencing? And she'll arrive at something with a right brain message that comes over to the left side. Via her vagus nerve, and she will automatically on her face show a representation of what the child is experiencing. It will sometimes be with the subtle eye musculature or the corners of the mouth. It's not something you would necessarily even notice as an adult, but the child is very interested. And if you've ever been in deep therapy, I'll tell you, when I was in deep therapy and I noticed I started feeling bad for my therapist because I was so – I mean her face, I was aware of every muscle. And I thought, this poor woman, I was like, she can't smile. I can't even like – without me like in on it. And I thought, well, there's that exchange thing again. So the child learns that representation – is a second order representation of their feeling. Like somebody understands my feeling and they're showing it back to me. I don't have words yet. I don't have verb. I don't have language. This pre-language stuff, this all starts. And so that's my feeling. And then the mother offers alongside that feeling vocal prosody, soothing affects, and in that exchange of body to body helps the baby then regulate that feeling. It's not so scary because mom understands it, another adult experiences it with me, and we co-regulate it. And of course, the baby's hippus, their eye movements, our pupils normally do this, moving my fingers up and down. And the baby and the mom's hippest times together, as well as their heart rates and all these things, is profound. The way our bodies attune, as particularly as caretakers of children, especially women, or whatever we're calling these biological entities that are able to do this now. I don't even know.
Right. Yeah.
So there it is. That's the exchange. That's the fundamental aspect of the change, the exchange.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes in life, we are faced with tough choices and the path forward isn't always clear. Whether you're dealing with decisions around your career, relationships, or anything else, therapy helps you stay connected to what you really want while you navigate life so you can move forward with confidence and excitement. You know this is a mental health show, right? And we preach therapy on this show. So if you're thinking about it and it's something you haven't tried yet, try it. If it's something you're looking to get back into,
Try it, all right? If you're thinking of starting therapy at all, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/honeydew today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/honeydew. BetterHelp.com/honeydew. Now, let's get back to the dew.
You mentioned deep therapy. So yeah. I want to talk about this for a second because you introduced me to EMDR therapy, right, which incorrectly for a while I called EDMR therapy. And I've passed that gift on to so many people in my personal life. And I preach it on here because I have never, I didn't even know it was called talk therapy until I was introduced to EMDR therapy. I'm like, oh, this is just me talking to someone. And like you say, brain to brain, getting some insight, some hindsight, whatever it is. But this EMDR therapy, man, I originally had gone for my daughter almost got hit by a car, and all of a sudden I became terrified to fly.
Yeah.
And
EMDR is perfect for stuff like
that. A little ridiculously scared of heights all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, when I'm in a plane, I look out the window, that looks like a cartoon.
Classic, dude.
200.
Classic.
300 feet. And within, I mean, 2 months, 8 sessions maybe.
Yeah.
I was done. I can sleep on my flights now. Now I look at other people when turbulence hits and they're like, oh, and I just like, man.
But you may want to go deeper again to deal with some of the childhood stuff too, because that can be managed the same way. I don't know if you did do a lot of that stuff.
But we got to some of it, but my main focus was like, let's get me, I need to fly to work.
Yeah, I get it. No, it's like, perfect for that. And it
worked.
And I was doing therapy back before EMDR was sort of a standard kind of way of doing this. It really gets your brain when it's been traumatized, right? I've described to you now how the vagus thing is sort of set up. When it dissociates, right, from trauma, you're shut down, your body, all these things dissociate. It leaves that part of the brain disconnected, wiring-wise, from the regulation of the whole. It's just a piece that's off in the distance there. And the individual experience, that it's adaptive. It's a survival thing that the human brain does. But the experience, the individual experience that is, well, that's, I don't think about that anymore. That's done. It isn't done with you. It's in the background there, always needing. It's a part of you, and it needs attention.
I had no idea. It will find it. That shit was laying in a hammock, just waiting.
It will get you. It will find a way to get its attention.
Like you said, at age 55, you felt vindicated. That popped up for. I loved flying. I felt like a rock star taking off into the sky. Then all of a sudden, I was like, oh, and I was like, how? What is going on? And I couldn't get over that. It worked. Like, let's talk about the buzzing in the hands and just sort of what it does to your – literally does to your brain.
We literally don't really know.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
That's the thing. It was all been discovered very serendipitously. It was a woman walking through the forest and noticed when she moved her eye back and forth, she started experiencing things she'd been trying to get at for a long time and couldn't get to. And all of a sudden there it was. And so it's, I think of it as kind of a releasing, like a frontal releasing experience. Like there are repetitive things you can do that tend to kind of slow down or shut down parts of the brain that get in the way of us experiencing things. the defensive structure, our cognitive structure, all that stuff gets in the way. And when you do EMDR, all that kind of slows up or shuts down, and woof, what comes up is what's been sitting there needing some attention for quite some time typically. And it will cause people to do behaviors and do drugs and all kinds of things.
Is that right? Even later in life like that?
Oh, my God, yes. That's why people say, I feel comfortable for the first time. They didn't even realize they were uncomfortable, but that part has been there driving, stirring things up. And it's often, if you've had, you know, bad abuse, it's often pain. It's really a feeling of pain all the time that you're walking around in the background with and don't even know. So I'm going to go back to the baby and the exchange. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I finish that. So if you've been traumatized, particularly by the person or the people that are supposed to be the source of the regulation, that is such a violation of trust. It is so shattering that you can't trust anybody after that. So trust becomes a major issue. Closeness becomes a major issue. And think about how vulnerable children are. You know, that think about they're open and vulnerable. They just, right? They're just there. And then all of a sudden,
you can tell them anything. Santa Claus.
This happens, yeah, and right. It just, they can't, it shatters their ability to tolerate, and they will not come back. It's no go anymore. And that's what you're trying to overcome. That's what I deal with in the addiction field all the time, trying to get them into the frame of just being able to rebuild that regulatory system.
Why does it lead us to things like addiction, though? Why?
Because you're in pain, and these things are – you don't realize it, and all of a sudden you feel okay. You tell a 17-year-old or a 15-year-old who's just felt good for the first time in his or her life and been carrying a lot of pain around, wasn't even aware of it. It's hard to get them not to do those things. Yeah. And then if you have the genetic potential for addiction, well, now then that kicks in. So you have two problems. You're trying to regulate trauma, and you have addiction, which is a common combination.
Yeah. And what do you think? Let's talk about men especially, because this is a generation I feel like I always say we're an interesting generation of men, because my grandfather was World War II, my father was Vietnam era, and then I'm like, I want to be a clown. You know what I mean? It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know what I mean? Yeah. So we're a weird sort of generation of men who also are trying to stop this train of trauma moving on, and really sort of Frankie Quiones, who was on here, called our parents professional suppressors. And I was like, it's a great term. They just pushed everything down.
Yeah.
And now we're trying to figure out what the hell's going on to stop these cycles and all this.
Correct.
But I don't think enough men are comfortable enough to still sit and talk about mental health and what they're going through. I think it's still a lot of that machismo bullshit of like, I'll walk it off. I'm fine.
Well, remember, we're wired for that. I mean, that's what the brain wants us to do, to forget about it, move on, and survive. Survive.
Is that men or anyone?
Anyone. But men have a little more of that because we're not connected to that part of our brain very well. The corpus callosum is smaller. So, you know, it's a pendulum always, right? I mean, when you look back at some of the parenting we had, some of that now starts to look good compared to the helicopter parenting.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And the self-esteem bullshit. We did a generation a disservice trying to undo what we thought our parents had done.
The everyone gets a trophy generation. That's
terrible.
I had kids late, but that is basically the people I went to high school with, is that's their generation.
Terrible. Yeah. Really? And being perfect parents because our parents were so shitty. I'm not going to do that to my kid. And kids need adversity. They need challenges. They have to come up against reality. That's what mental health is managing reality on reality's terms. Yeah, they don't need abuse. Yes, they need more emotional openness. But they do need a certain amount of fucking get on with it and just go try out for the football team. If you fail, try harder.
Right.
Not because you need to deserve a trophy. You're the best.
Well, let me go tell that coach something because you're my coach, kid.
Yeah. Coach doesn't like
right,
me.
Right.
It's like, no, get your shit together. Yeah. Watch that Arnold documentary, everybody. It is all about this. Just go do stuff. The guy was dedicated to improvement. Yeah, I think now we've done another disservice to another population by overdoing our sort of involvement and engagement and sacrifice for kids. It's our own vulnerability, our own feeling of pain that we are trying to avoid in them. But that's our pain, not theirs.
Right.
We can't make them responsible for that. So as always, the pendulum goes back and forth. It's never a perfect parent. It just doesn't exist. I would argue that we have moved forward in terms of our ability to manage, you know, really significant things and understanding significant things as it pertains to the impact of parenting on human development. We're kind of getting better at all that. But damn, take a bunch of nine-year-olds and tell them they have to hide under their bed, shelter in place, and if you go outside, you're going to kill your parents and your grandparents. And oh, by the way, no contact with your peers for 2 years. Or if you do, I'm going to shove a swab up your nose. And here's school on this pad. Oh, the porn, don't pay any attention to that. What the fuck did we think we were going to end up with? I mean, it was so predictable. I kept saying we were going to destroy 8 to 15-year-olds. And we did. So the mental health stuff there is just intense now. Intense.
It is, huh?
Oh, my God.
But in your field, are you seeing at least more and more, in particular, men coming forward to talk about things and
– Yeah, I mean,
and also,
look,
what race of people do you see least in therapy? Two questions. Tell me about men
first. So I'm not working so much in day-and-out mental health. I'm doing general medicine now. So I'm going to speak sort of – Generally. In great
generic numbers.
Yeah, I know. What do you call it where you generalize about people? Yeah. What was that last thing you said?
What race of people?
No, before that you said something else.
Are you seeing more men these days come forward to talk about this?
I think men have benefited from the Zoom revolution in mental health care. Because we don't want to run into somebody in the waiting room. There's no waiting room. We don't want to turn our camera on. Don't fucking turn your camera on. That's fine.
Oh.
You know, we got to get them in the door.
You can remain anonymous and
you
still
can do whatever
help.
You want. Just get in the door. And that is a lot of the struggles, getting them in. And of course, men with all medical stuff, you are more likely to come in because their female partner brought them in than – I mean, that's how I got my prostate cancer diagnosed was my mom. My wife was like, I'm making you an appointment. I'm all right. Boom, prostate cancer.
Holy shit.
And, that's definitely my experience in practicing out there. It's the men, particularly younger, you know, like middle-aged men, we don't want to come in. Fuck that.
No.
If we die, we die. We'll find out soon enough if this is a bad problem. So we're so nutty. We're so stupid. So, all right. So what race? I'm not sure I can really generalize. I would say, of course, I would say it's more about – well, there are definitely cultures.
Okay,
like certain Asian cultures are about, you know, don't – it's actually anathema to share your feelings. You just keep it shut down. So certainly that culture bears out many times on people's ability to come in and share and do the work of treatment. In my experience, the African-American community has reasonably had a horrible experience with mental health in this country and so doesn't trust it. And if they have trauma, now they're doubly not trusting it. And I say that's – not only is that healthy, that's real.
That's reality. Yeah.
But we have lots of African-American practitioners now and people that are culturally trained and they should open up. They'd rather go to the church. And people do go there, and I think the church is slowly moving towards understanding they got to refer back. I mean, generally, and plenty of white people do that too. Trust me, the church is a reasonable place to go for certain kinds of spiritual experiences, and oftentimes they'll have people trained there that will help them more with the mental health piece. And I've seen more and more they're more willing to refer back to when it's outside of their ability. So that exchange is starting to happen, which is good. I worry about the lack of acknowledgement of trauma and intergenerational. You know, trauma transmits intergenerationally.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah,
is it? It really does. Is it? Oh, yeah. Is it in our DNA?
Yeah, There are people that theorize that it's an epigenetic phenomenon. Of course, intense experiences we do know does affect our genes. Whether that can be passed epigenetically, I'm not sold. You don't need that to pass trauma. All you need is somebody who was physically abused, for instance, and felt that was something they needed for discipline, and then they do it to their children. That's it. It's on then. And this it's the odd thing about trauma. There's several odd things about trauma. One is we not just normalize it, but we make it good, right? Like, that's a way of sort of feeling okay, as opposed to feeling like I was nearly destroyed by this and I'm a little thing. I'm a little being that was so dependent on this big person and that person nearly destroyed me. We identify with the perpetrator and say, they're doing what's right for me. I needed this. And therefore, I'm going to be that big person and do that for my children. Oh, man, is that fucked up thinking. That is the exact opposite of how we should go in our brains. And yet we do it that way. The other thing we do, the odd thing that humans do, is that we recreate the traumas of the past. When they are childhood traumas in particular. So dad is an abusive alcoholic who abandons the family. You are automatically attracted to abusive alcoholic men if you're a daughter of that guy. And you do it over and over and over again. And of course, because if you're attractive to some guy who's an abusive abandoning alcoholic, he will oblige you and be an abusive abandoning alcoholic. That's what he does. And yet you do it again. And even when, you know, I hear people saying this all the time, I am never going to be around a guy or a woman like that again. The men are often more than the codependent size. I got it. I see what they are. I know it now. I'm never going to do that again. Here's the extraordinary thing. They always do it again because no one talks about attraction. They talk about you learned your lesson cognitively, which they have, but they're still attracted to those kinds of people. And even though cognitively that doesn't person seems not to have all those features and I'm not going to be around anymore, the fact that I'm attracted to that person tells you it's that kind of person again. Unless you either have to one of two things when you're in that pattern of repetition. You have to either not go for people you're so attracted to. So we tell people think butterflies, not lightning bolts. If it's a lightning bolt attraction, it's going to be the abusive, banning alcoholic. Even though it doesn't look like that, it's going to be that. I promise you, it's you. You're a perfect instrument. You're having lightning bolts. So if you can find somebody who maybe is a recovering alcoholic or maybe had an alcoholic parent also and shares that with you, and you're sort of attracted but not lightning bolts, and you can build a closeness there, you'll find it much more satisfying. If you can't do that, you got to go to therapy or you will keep doing the same damn thing.
So let me ask you this then. How do we, especially as parents, if we do need to correct some but not too much, what's the balance of not overcorrecting and not being the helicopter, everybody gets a trophy?
I don't know.
I'm the same way. Like my daughter gets a participation trophy. I'm like, no. The reward is participating.
Yeah.
Okay, we can't. How the hell does anybody know what bad is if we don't know what good is? This team also over here, they did better than everybody else this year. These coaches, these kids, these parents, whatever it was, whatever cohesive thing they had going on, there's going to be one. They did it better than everybody else.
Yeah.
What the hell does the 0-12 team get the trophy? My stepson used to get trophies. Like, I'm not kidding you. Come up to this. I'm like, and they'd be broken in his room and stuff. I had my trophies until I was in my 30s.
I probably did the same thing.
And I did a photo shoot with them, and then I just sent them off to the dumpster after that.
But I will
that.
Tell you the one thing that we had back in those days that they got rid of that I thought was very meaningful, most improved. Remember that? Most improved had the same status as most valuable.
Yeah.
Because the guy or gal that really put in the effort and who was shitty to begin with and really started to perform with the team, that was awesome. I got most improved. Improve when you're choking up. Really, it's weird. And it was the most important thing ever happened to me. And I thought an acknowledgement for having gone from a bench warmer to a player was a big deal to me. And that was overcoming adversity, which is what we all need these experiences doing. We need to be challenged with stuff. And we can be present for our kids. So here's the balance. Be present for your kids as a refueling station. But do not co-sign any of their stuff. Do not rescue them from anything. We rescue in this parent group.
Yeah, talk
no
about that.
No rescue. Rescuing is I see the pain in the child. I have to make it stop. Okay? Why do you need to make it stop? I mean, I understand you want to go help a child. But the reason you have to make it stop is your pain was mobilized. The pain left behind from your childhood. You don't realize the distinction between that child's pain and your pain. And your pain is mobilized. It's a very deep psychological experience that most people can't differentiate. It's most of what I worked in therapy myself.
Does it work the other way where, like, I see my daughter, like, she had a dance recital. Okay. Mm-hmm. Saturday was rehearsal. We're leaving the rehearsal. She's in her little dress and tights. Yep. And she's got Crocs on. Mm-hmm. And she's doing a balance beam on the curb.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
And I hear, and I look back on the ground, tights, knee ripped, knees bleeding. And I saw her look at me with the panic. It wasn't even about the knee ripped. It was, holy shit, these tights are ripped. Recital's tomorrow. We don't have any. And I felt the panic and I said, hey, you're good. She's like, oh, my knee. And I'm like, I grew up very boy, you know, it was beat my brothers. We're constantly wrecking bikes, no helmets, you know, idiot shit back then. But when I see my daughter's knee and she's going, ah, I'm the other way with it. I'm like, it's a scrape.
Well, not only that, but now let's go back to the early childhood exchange. So the child comes up to the mom and go, I hurt my finger. And the mom goes, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I need a drink. You make me crazy. I can't.
I need a drink.
That child then is.
You need a band-aid.
Right. Yeah. So that child learns that when I have a feeling, my mom catches the feeling and evokes something that I don't want.
Right.
That's where codependency comes from. So now I have to. I can't show her my feelings. I have to suppress my feelings to manage her feelings. Make sure she doesn't go get loaded again, or to make sure she doesn't yell at me again. And that's not good. What the child needs is you to be present, not feel their feelings, but appreciate their feelings, which is a different thing.
That's what I try to say. I know that.
And
hurts.
If your feelings are evoked, then you have a feeling that is the opposite of what the child needs. Right? You get that? And so this is what boundaries are about.
And I'm bad at boundaries. I'm learning.
Well, and so is our generation of parents generally.
Yeah.
And that's where the rescuing kicks in. We have to, because our boundaries are shitty and we evoke these things that we should be just being with and just differentiating my feelings from your feelings. We're not. We are evoked and we have to rescue. And that keeps a child ever in need of rescue. Now, let's say you've been pretty good at those boundaries a lot of the children's life, and you've been letting them be challenged and letting them fall down and stuff. There is still, I've noticed something about our parenting style that these kids, even into young adulthood, say remain awfully preoccupied with us. In our day, the parents, we wanted to get the fuck away as fast as possible. Just get the hell out of here. I can't stand to be around these people.
I'm on my bike. I'm going to play anything.
As soon as you're 18, you're like, that's it, man. I'm never coming back. I may be around them a little bit, but I'm not going to stay here. The bouncing back stuff is us. That's us.
That's why kids are still 20. Well, we can get into how expensive everything is.
There's a legitimate piece to their bouncing back. That's especially in California. It's impossible.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's insane. And so, and humans have lived in multifamily in households forever. So maybe this is a okay thing. Maybe this isn't a good thing. And our desire to get out, because a man at 17, I left for college at 17. That was it. I couldn't even imagine. My parents left me before 17.
Yeah, so
there was no going back.
There you go.
But I was raised in an extended family. Like, my grandmom was like a mom. And I feel like what that really did. Today, I still have a very if I see an elderly lady especially or someone, I'm right over there to help them out. Like, I try to do things like that where my grandmom would be proud. You know what I mean? Yeah. But also, I got to learn what. I'm living with this lady it's my father who died, but that's her son. Mm-hmm. And more now, I start to see and feel what she possibly could have felt You know, like I'm over there going, Grandma, let Dad rest in peace. You know what I mean? Like, it's always you're crying about him or whatever. And now I'm like,
parent,
I couldn't even imagine, you know, and she would say, I'm never going to see him come up that hill again. And and I think of those lines have stuck with me, and I replay them. What, 30 years later as a parent now that I didn't even remember I remembered that damn thing. And I'm like, God, you lost a son. I lost a dad. They're both devastating, but I don't know which one's worse.
The one thing, no, it's the parent. In these
parent
kinds of
losing the child.
Because let me just say this.
Yeah.
Is that when your parents have been abusive and never really fully healed that, they do you a favor at the end of their life because you're like, it's okay. I see people who are very close, say that the mom thing for you and I, very close to their moms who just suffer forever. They lost their mom. And I'm like, I didn't have one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mom. I don't really have any deep feelings about it because there was nothing there. You know, it's 50 years of destroying a child's bond. Well done.
Yeah, you succeeded.
Yeah, succeeded.
So
I'm more attached to my therapist, my wife, and my daughter.
Yeah,
that way. So
I it's interesting because my daughter knows my mom as her grandmom to be a good grandma.
Yeah.
At some point, someday, she'll listen to these episodes and hear the relationship we had.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going to happen when that happens, and I'll address it. You know, honestly. Because the relationship she has with her grandmother is not the relationship I have with her. It's one of the things I was struggling with when we tried to reconnect. I'm like, is their relationship my business?
So you've mentioned now connection. I said attachment or attach. And I misspoke a little bit when I said you asked where the trauma understanding came from. It really came out of attachment stuff, attachment theory. And what was noticed, there was some famous theoreticians back now 40, 50 years ago who came up with adult attachment styles. There are four different attachment styles.
Yeah, let's hear this.
Well, there's insecure, there's disorganized, there's avoidant, there's secure, healthy.
I was going to say, are any of them?
Yeah, okay, but it's rare. Right, you don't see it that much anymore. Yeah. But in therapy, people reestablish secure attachment with people. That's what sort of happens. And each of these has its own sort of style to it. The original researchers were like, well, how does this happen? What's going on in people's brains? And that's how they got to all the stuff I've been talking about today. And attachment is another system operating in the brain. It's sort of a way of navigating closeness, let's say that. And, you know, there is closeness and regulation and attunement. There is attachment and there's love. And each of these are their own little system. And we don't have a lot of understanding on the two yet. We got to the regulation part because I think we got there quick because it had therapeutic value. But an attachment does have – there are people trying to categorize what's going over on at the regulation side with the attachment stuff. And that's – and then love is its own kind of bird. It's over here. And then there's spirit too, which is another kind of sort of hard to go under the microscope stuff. And I love that stuff. It's meaningful. It's real. But it's something that people experience in different ways. And it's all, though, love and attunement and attachment. And it's all about me with you, this thing we call relationship. And that is where I experience the spiritual.
Yeah, at first when my daughter's mother and I split, I was just so worried about the back and the forth. And we say, you know, kids are resilient and all that. And I don't know. There are times where I wonder if going back and forth isn't actually good for her to see
maybe
different parenting style, different lifestyle over here. These people in this world, these neighbors, this whatever versus this over
maybe
here. Is it a little more? Do you think that could be a little more helpful in sort of like being well rounded? So
yeah,
to speak?
I don't want to use words like more and helpful.
Fair enough.
But there might be something to it, provided that it may give more breadth to her understanding of herself and her experience. Whether it's more, better, helpful, I'm not sure, but it certainly has that potential to give more breath. The problem is there's something called splitting. Do you know what splitting is? Mm-hmm. Okay. Splitting is a problem in parenting, and it's a problem in personality development, which is what children naturally do, which is, mommy, I want an ice cream. No, it's an hour before dinner. No. Daddy, mommy's, right. Daddy, I want ice cream. Dad says, all right, sure, get an ice cream. Mommy, dad said I can get ice cream. This is splitting. And when people, humans, children especially, and adults too to some extent, can pit one person against another, they often feel split internally. There's no consistent whole in themselves because there's this relationship and there's this relationship over here, and I split the two of them so I don't get the whole that I need. So that's what you got to watch out for.
All right.
Yeah, the splitting. And if she starts splitting you guys, you know it's on.
Yeah.
Now it's on. Daddy, I have way more fun over here with you. Mommy's such a bitch. Blah, 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 blah. And so, and again, back to my.
I hear that's coming in the teen years.
And, Oh, yeah. Oh, we'll have another conversation then. Yeah. But that's why we started this conversation talking about my team that I built to treat drug addicts and alcoholics. That's another thing the team has to be unsplittable. We have to know each other so well that when they go and said, Dr. Pinsky, Dr. Blum said, I can have that Xanax. I just go, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. I know him. I know. We just go back, get back to the group. Just shut up.
Right.
You know, and we are a unified, without exception. No one ever doubts what the other person's judgment is. And we just know each other and how we respond.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Dr. Drew, thank you so much for coming on here.
This is great. I hope that people use this as a bit of a, it's kind of like a resource.
This is a different podcast. Yeah, I know it's like, in the comedy world, but we do sit down and talk about real things.
Yeah, and this, what I feel like we really ran the cycle. You know what I mean? Like we really covered this topic. So if people want to visit this topic, you know, revisit this pod, listen to this thing, because there's a lot of material in here I was going over very quickly. I don't expect anyone to kind of get it all at once, but this is sort of there are books out there on this, and people that try to write books, you know, help people understand these things, but this was a pretty good synopsis of the landscape of this topic. So
hell yeah, thank you very much. Plug, promote everything, please.
So go to drdrew.tv, please. My wife does a streaming show Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 3:00, where we have been interviewing all the doctors and scientists who have been canceled during COVID, and you will learn a shit ton.
All right,
I've learned so much. I don't agree with everything they say. Some of the stuff I understand why they got canceled, but they all have stuff in there. I'm like, well, hell, you were there when this happened. Oh my god, and how? What were they thinking? Oh, whoa! The whole pandemic. I was just sitting there going, what is going on? That is what I'm slowly answering, is what happened? How did this incredibly obvious misadventure happen to us? And what are the consequences going to be? And then also After Dark, which you've been on several times, over at your mom's house, Dr. Drew After Dark. Yep. And I do a podcast with Adam on a regular basis still, Adam Carolla, and the Dr. Drew podcast, all at drdrew.com.
Thank you, Dr. Drew. As always, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. We'll talk to y'all next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin.
Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.